Hey, podcasters, welcome to another edition of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Mestredal, coming from you the land of extreme heat. Yes, I'm in Arizona, where it's been 120, 117, 113. It's a dry heat. So was at Toyota's Proving Grounds yesterday and was able to drive the new Toyota, ride in, the new Toyota H2O. It's hydrogen fuel cell semi. So I'm going to talk to you about that on this today's episode. I got some news to go over. But first, remember, this episode is brought to you by our friends over at HID Extra. Go to HIDExtra.com for the latest in HID and LED headlight and lighting needs. Make sure you use promo code PPT15 to get 15% off your order at HIDExtra.com. As you may notice, today's episode, my partner in crime is not with me. Jill Simonello is actually on an L train heading towards the airport. We are both traveling like crazy these days, and timing just doesn't work out, so I'm doing it solo. Only me-o. It is my podcast today, only me, so if you're listening, waiting for her fantastic input, I'm sorry you'll be sadly without today. So let's start first with some news. Some big news items before I go too long about Jill not being here, and you're turning me off. Toyota made a few announcements this week. Well, you know, it's really, they didn't make announcements. It's what they kind of said in the press release that you had to read into to see it. So they're not really announcing these things. They just are leaving stuff off. So the 2018 Toyota Tundra, the one that comes out this fall, is going to have several changes. First, it's going to have a TRD Sport package, which from what I can tell is not, it's more like a street racer, I guess, than a off-road vehicle. It's an interesting package. Just a few modifications, no powertrain changes, just some styling and some wheel changes. So that's new. That's new addition. The deletion is the Toyota Tundra TRD Pro is going to be dead for that model year. Never to fear. That kind of signals a new Tundra is on the way. They did the same thing when they did the Tacoma launch. They got rid of the TRD Pro, and they what that allows them to do is focus their engineering on the new model truck, and then they go back into TRD Pro later on. And also from a capacity standpoint, San Antonio, they are capacity constrained, and so that allows them to get the Sport out and put the Sport and see how the customers respond to that. And speaking of capacity constrained and improving their allotment of different vehicles, they are discontinuing the Toyota Tundra single cab, regular cab, the one without any more room in it. This has been an ongoing trend. Actually, it was interesting. I was reading a PickupTrucks.com story on it, and I had written in 2013 my initial story ever. First time ever I've ever written freelance. I wrote a story called Is the Single Cab Doomed? And the point of that story was that new CAFE requirements, corporate average fuel economy requirements, are based on the footprint of vehicles. So if you imagine like a box, right? And so that's the box of a truck. And so if you not the bed, but the whole thing, cabin, everything. If you just think of like a box, they take that length times width and figure out the footprint, the cubic footprint, not cubic footprint, but the overall footprint of that vehicle. And they take that and they say that a vehicle, that footprint, needs to get this type of fuel economy. Okay, so you know, truck is basically a box, cab, engine is just a big rectangle. So if you have a single cab with a regular bed, you have a smaller footprint than you will, say, a Crew Max, but that footprint is still made to meet the fuel economy of a truck. And so it's really hard to have a regular cab meet the fuel economy of the set out from the government, and that's why the larger footprint allows them more variability when meeting that CAFE requirement. So that's why Crew Maxes and the longer beds and things, it's actually easier for automakers to meet that requirement. So the CAFE, in my opinion, is going to kill the single cab. It's not going to allow that vehicle to stay around. You have that issue. You also have, from a manufacturing standpoint, you have the fact that the single cab comes down the line. It's a little bit different. You got to work with a little bit different in your system. And it doesn't, you know, if you're designing a line, ideally Crew Max and double cab, so the Crew Max is their crew cab, and the double cabs are extended cab. Those just seem like they fit better down the line. And you can still make it work. It's just a little bit different process. So now you clean up the process a little bit. You don't have the regular cab going down the line. And third aspect is, well, people aren't buying them. I mean, that's probably the biggest aspect and biggest reason they're killing them. Toyota, so far this year, has sold 0.4% of all Toyota Tundra sales have been regular cab. That means that they've only sold around 200 regular cab pickups, or actually less than that, for the year. We're in June. 200 for the year. And I mean, they're selling 7,000 to 8,000 a month. You're looking at the product mix for them, and their extended cab sales are 34.1%, or double cab, whatever terminology you want to use, and the crew max is 65.5%. So, you know, people aren't buying them. They're just not the case. Even fleet managers, in a lot of cases, you can buy a double cab or the extended cab for the same price you can a regular cab, because there's no big benefit anymore to those. And if you think back as well, if you're an astute truck enthusiast, you'll notice that Colorado and Canyon both got rid of their regular cabs and now have rear seat delete in the extended cab they have set up. It's just not a viable truck platform that much anymore. And it's interesting because I see a lot of single cabs out there in my area, and I know a lot of people like them because you don't have a bunch of stuff build up in your truck. You don't have to worry about all this storage. Let's be frank. Storage can be a good thing and a bad thing. It can be good to have extra room in your truck for hauling stuff, especially inside the cab to keep it out of the weather and things like that. But it can be bad because you can build up a lot of stuff in your cab of your truck, and it almost overwhelms your truck because you have all the stuff in there. And so there's a pro and con there. I still think extended cab is what I would buy because I want that extra room. So it's interesting. So interesting news from Toyota. Well, this all just, you know, really tells me they're getting built up again for a new truck coming out, which means, so let's say they do a new truck next year. That'd be 2019 in the fall it would come out. So that means the 2018 Chicago Auto Show, which is their truck show, Toyota's truck show, they would unveil a new Tundra. I don't know. There's no word on powertrain, and they do not talk about future product planning is, you know, the word I always get. So I can speculate all day. I don't know what's coming. I have some thoughts as far as what they need to do, and we'll get to that later on another podcast. I want to move on, though, to some news that was confirmed. Chevy and GMC are creating a new truck as well. So they're both working on a new Sierra and new Silverado, respectively. The big news with these was aluminum. So if you think back, you know, Chevy made fun of Ford over the aluminum bed. They dropped the toolbox in. They dropped the rocks from the skid steer. They kind of have picked on Ford quite a bit over that. And there's been a lot of speculation that Chevy and GMC are going to go all aluminum. They're going to have aluminum trucks just like Ford has. I don't know. I haven't always bought into that thinking theory. They could, but I don't think that there's that big of a fuel economy gain for that big of an investment they put into it. And I just don't think customers are really that interested in it. But there's ways to do it. You can have we've had aluminum hoods for a long time. You can use aluminum throughout the truck and lightweight it and keep getting a little bit better fuel economy. So one of the thoughts that Chevy and GMC were going to do was going to have a aluminum bed. So the idea was to cut a bunch of weight off by putting aluminum in the bed and ring it around. And some crafty spy photographer, a spy videographer, I guess you could use the word, this guy, he's pretty clever. He saw a bunch of Chevy and GMC trucks in camouflage, you know, the testing mules of these trucks, and he saw them parked along in the parking lot, and he ran up with a magnet, and he did video of himself putting the magnet on the side of the bed to see if it would stick. So if you know the properties of metal, you know aluminum doesn't attract magnets, and so the magnet would have fell off if it was aluminum, and if it's steel, it would have created a thud. It would have snapped to the side of the bed. Well, it snapped to the side of the bed. Boop. Big thud. You can't see it in the video, but you can hear the thud of the magnet attaching to the bed. And you get his quote from saying that, it attached to the bed. So there you go. There's the confirmation that the Chevy and GMC beds are going to still be steel. I do expect them to use more aluminum in different places throughout the truck, but that means that the full truck won't be aluminum. It's because the bed's not. So we'll see what they end up doing. The third item that came out this week was the Jeep Wrangler JL. The small two-door Wrangler was spy photographer again. Some took a bunch of photos of a new Jeep Wrangler. This has got a lot of people's attention because there's a lot of concern, concern over whether it's going to be aluminum, concern how they're going to change it. And so what they're seeing so far is this bunch of aerodynamic changes. So the front grille is moved back a little bit. The windshield rake, which is the angle of the windshield, is turned back a little bit to reduce some better aerodynamics and to reduce the road noise on highways and things. So nothing really crazy. There's still speculation over the engine choices. You know, if it's going to be a turbocharged in line 4, if they're going to keep the V6, they're going to go an EcoDiesel, which, who knows? At this point, I think half the rumors out there are wrong. I think it's just going to be another evolution of the Jeep Wrangler with a possible turbocharged engine, and EcoDiesel will be available when the FCA gets done fighting with Justice Department and actually gets the diesels certified for this model year, because it's a no-brainer to throw it in there. So I think it's just not a lot, there shouldn't be a lot of worry. There is some news that it'll be unveiled here this summer. There'll be a new Jeep Wrangler, we'll put up some photos of it. So I'm anticipating a one-off event, maybe at their facility there in Toledo, to show off the new Wrangler. So we will keep you in the loop as far as when that happens. And we'll be right back with more on today's show. I'm going to get to the project portal when I drove the rode in. I have to keep saying drive because I'm used to driving things. I don't have a CDL. So when I rode in the hydrogen fuel cell semi, and I want to close by giving you some thoughts on the Ford Raptor I'm driving this week. I'll be right back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Okay, let's get down to why I'm here in Arizona. I'm here at the Toyota's Proving Grounds to drive the new Project Portal. It is a hydrogen fuel cell powered semi. It was announced a few months ago. It is part of a project Toyota's going on with the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. There's a corridor there where they pick up a bunch of shipping from cargo ships come in, and they drive them to distribution centers. And it's one of the most polluted freeways, the 710 freeway. It's one of the most polluted areas in the world. And so Toyota thought they could use a hydrogen fuel-celled semi to cut down on emissions. So emissions from a hydrogen fuel-cell vehicle, like their Mirai that they've already created, it's a small car, basically emits water. And it's such a small amount of water, it doesn't really impact the environment at all. So it's a zero-emission truck, and this is a proof-of-concept truck. So they're trying to just prove that they can use hydrogen fuel cell stacks in a semi, and they're just trying to see what the pros and cons and what they're going to do with it. So they literally took two Mirais, took them to the proving grounds, tore them apart, and put it into one Kenworth semi. That's literally what they did. And so this semi, they've had some cool videos on it. There's a video on our Facebook page showing some big advantages. First of all, it's an electric truck that produces 670 horsepower and 1,325 pound-feet of torque. And it's an electric truck in that it uses the fuel cells to create electricity to power the electric motor in the front. So the diesel's gone, electric motor in the front. It's got two Mirai fuel stacks, which are basically, they look like just cylinders, and inside the cylinders goes hydrogen, and they have hookup. You can basically go to the gas station and there'd be a nozzle, and you just fill it with hydrogen, and the hydrogen expends out of the system, turns into electricity, and then it powers the engine. It's got two motors that are back on the back wheels. They are working together. They're inline motors, and it's how the truck works. That's the design of it. So it has a gross combined weight capacity of 80,000 pounds, and fully loaded, they anticipate it's going to have a range of 200 miles. Okay, so they're going to be able to go to the port, pick up a bunch of cargo, deliver it to the distribution center, and go back and forth all day long and fill up, you know, I don't know how many miles it is. It depends on the operation, depends on what's going on. But they'll be able to fill up, and the filling times, I've been told, are the same as what a diesel engine filling time is. So there's no downside there. While I was at the tech center, the proving grounds, not tech center, getting my Toyota lingo correct, we talked with Chris Rovick. He's the executive program manager for the advanced fuel cell truck. And Giorgio Soya, he is the program manager for the fuel cell. He's a powertrain system control for advanced fuel cells. And Giorgio has a PhD, and Chris has the overall knowledge of the vehicle. So I have some tidbits of an interview we did in a roundtable I'm going to insert into this podcast and let you listen to from their own words of what the system is. And first, we're going to hear from Chris. He's going to explain to us how the truck came apart and how they kind of put it together and what it really is.
It is an electric truck. So basically, this is essentially it's a battery-powered electric truck. that has a hydrogen recharging capability. And actually, we run it primarily. The way the system is designed is it runs off of the hydrogen fuel cells and the batteries kind of as a boost. So other ways that you would see, you know, other companies or people that are potentially looking at hydrogen have larger batteries, and they're running it primarily off the battery side of the powertrain, and then the hydrogen is refueling the battery. It's not engineered to be a, right, a truck fuel cell stack. It's okay. And essentially, because this was a fast development program that we needed to do, we took two Mirai vehicles and we tore them apart, and we took the components out of those vehicles, the fuel cell stack and other components, and integrated them into the truck. So the tanks, as we said, are different. The tanks are larger, the battery's larger, and the motors are completely different than what you would have in a Mirai. But
One of the reasons I'm here, and what really excites me about this truck, is the scalability, right? So you can take this same design and you can apply it to all different kinds of vehicle platforms. You just got to change, you know, there's development process to it, but you can take the same thought process that you use in a semi and use it in a Tundra, a Tacoma, and large SUVs, medium SUVs. I mean, you can apply that to all sorts of different SUVs. And the exciting thing for the consumers is we have a renewable resource and we have better fuel economy. For example, they haven't done any fuel economy testing in the semi, so they don't release any numbers yet. But if you did some analysis online, you looked at a Toyota Mirai, which is about the size of a Camry, let's say it's this Camry size, it gets fuel about 312 miles on a full tank of hydrogen fuel. So the total range is 312 miles. But with the combined city highway fuel economy, the way they figured this out with using the battery and the fuel cells and stuff like that, it gets a fuel economy rating of 66 miles per gallon. Okay, so keep that in mind. 66 miles per gallon, okay? The Toyota Camry, the 2017 Toyota Camry, the best fuel economy it gets is 33 miles per gallon highway. Okay, so it's double, basically double. Now, it doesn't mean that the Tundra is going to be double or the Tacoma is going to be double, but think about that for a second. If they can double that in a small car, imagine what they can do in a full-size truck. And you're also under load. Like, so the Semi is able to pull that much weight, 80,000 pounds, with hydrogen fuel cell. So it's very exciting to think that they could prove a concept, they could get this to work, they could build a bunch of them, they could cut down pollution in the California region, and then as hydrogen is expanded through more and more pipelines, you could end up having hydrogen at your gas station. You can build it as part of any big gas station, as long as you have some room. There's some setbacks you gotta get away from gasoline. But you could drive up and literally have a vehicle that has hydrogen instead. And so it's a very exciting process and very exciting to think about the design. So I'm going to listen to play a clip here with Chris talking about scalability.
And our system is there to keep the battery as small as possible and really show that scalability of the fuel cell itself. Okay. The fuel cell is what's providing all that power.
Now next we need to talk about why fuel cells. So like, why are they becoming a thing now? Why haven't we heard them before? And I'm going to have Giorgio talk and play this clip of him explaining why fuel cells make sense in today's world.
Things of fuel cells were, they were pretty expensive because of the platinum that you need to get hydrogen to go through the membrane. Mm-hmm. So now those materials are being changed, and the quantity of expensive material is going lower, and I think there is even thinking that we might even not need anymore those expensive materials.
One thing you're going to find controversial about hydrogen fuel cells is the hydrogen itself. So much like when they built electric cars, the criticism has always been that creating the battery for electric cars is more environmentally harmful than what the electric car actually saves the environment. And so, you know, it's like you bought the electric car to improve the pollution in the environment, but you create a lot of pollution by building that electric car. It's a chicken and egg kind of situation. And maybe it's a short-sighted argument in that little bit of pollution you create in the beginning is outweighed by the long period of time of ownership of electric car. But, you know, that's still a valid criticism. So I had asked Giorgio about that, is with the CO2 emissions that happens when you're creating hydrogen. So right now there's a lot of controversy about you actually increase the CO2 emissions by creating hydrogen versus other fuel sources. So actually creating hydrogen is more pollution than what actually saves. However, that's not exactly the case, and Giorgio explains why.
If you make hydrogen from coal, it produces a lot of CO2. If you make hydrogen from electricity produced from electrolysis, from wind power, it has zero effect on the environment. So right now, as you said, the main production of hydrogen is for natural gas, and the main production is for the use of hydrogen in refineries to actually make gasoline.
Right. Yeah.
Because it is the hydrogenation of longer hydrocarbons have to come shorter. So natural gas is a pretty relatively clean way of making hydrogen, because you have 1C with 4 hydrogens instead of 1C and 2 hydrogen in a long chain. So to me, it seems like a good transition from fuels that have 1C and 2 hydrogens to fuels that have 1C and 4 hydrogens. So you have half C for the same hydrogen. The final goal, if you want to become CO2 emission free, is to produce hydrogen from sources that don't produce CO2.
So windmill
are doing in Hawaii.
Which, it could be from renewable natural gas, so from landfills, so you it goes in and it comes out and it comes back. It could be from electricity from solar, from hydro electricity, and frankly, it could be from nuclear power. It is a completely CO2 free way of producing.
Okay, you've heard from the experts, you've heard them talk about the design, you've heard them talk about the hydrogen. I rode shotgun. What do they think? That's the bottom line. What does it really do? What's it really feel like? And how does it compare with diesel powered semi trucks? I have to tell you that it is incredible. I think that's the word I would use. The adjective is incredible. There's so many interesting benefits here that are side benefits. So for example, when you get into the truck, you hear the compressor turnover, and it's compressing the air brakes and it's getting the air in going. That's all you hear. It literally is like driving, if you've ever driven a electric car or you've driven like the Toyota Prius, you literally just drive. You just put it in gear and go. You don't have to worry. It doesn't make any noise. This doesn't make hardly that much noise at all. I mean, the decibel numbers from like a diesel versus this have to be outstanding, whatever the difference is. It's so quiet. And then another thing too is, and I was kind of joking around with them, they literally took the shifter from the Mirai and put this in the gear shifter in that truck. It looks really teeny, really tiny. It's kind of a joke shifter in there. But literally, you just put it in drive, and you go. There's no floating in the gears. There's no shifting. There's nothing going on. You just put it in drive, and you go. It's phenomenal, the simplicity of that. And then 0 to 60 times. This is incredible. So if you've ever been behind a semi in traffic, you know they lurch. They lurch forward. They hop as they go through the gears. And some people are smoother than others, but quite often it takes them all to get going, especially if they're under load on a hill. I mean, you might as well just pull over, have a cup of coffee by the time it gets over the hill, right? Because it just takes forever to get to that point. This has 0 to 60 times off a dead stop, 7 seconds. 7 seconds. It literally threw me back in my seat as we're doing a 0 to 60. Literally threw me back in my seat, and it's so smooth. No jerking, no going through the gears, no shifting. It just pulls. It just absolutely pulls. And we didn't tow with load. We didn't have a load on there. There's some concerns about towing with load at the proving grounds because the concrete isn't made to have that much weight. It's just it's not a deep enough bed of concrete, and so you can't tow all the time. You have to be really careful. You're going to damage the road. But the guy confirmed to me, he says, we've towed with this. This is about what it feels like. And if you look on our Facebook page, we have a video of it towing under load versus a diesel. And it is incredible how much faster it is. So you have a couple things here that are maybe unintended benefits, the things you don't think about. So let's talk first of all. Hydrogen, you're going to be able to fuel it up. It's going to be more efficient than what you have in diesel fuel. It's going to be less pollution. And it's going to be less maintenance. So this is one of the unintended things too. Electric motors don't need oil changes. They don't have belts. They don't have teardown. They don't have the combustion cycle. And so from a fleet standpoint, you can have a dramatically less maintenance costs on a hydrogen fuel cell semi, like the Project Portal they have built. That's first unintended benefit. Another unintended benefit is noise pollution. So there's no noise. So the really noisy gas stations and things, you know, where you let the diesels running, which is interesting, I said that. People are like, well, what do you mean they let diesels running? Well, quite often, if you go to a truck stop, they'll have the diesel running all the time because it just, that's how they run the diesels. It's better for the engine is what I've been told. The longer you just let it idle, it doesn't hurt it at all. And so it saves the turning over all the time and starting up, which causes more damage. So you don't have that noise pollution. You don't have the neighbor or your whatever your over-the-road town or the semi stop. You don't have a bunch of noise from that because it's so quiet. So you're going to cut down on noise pollution. Engine braking. I live in a spot where the semis come in, and they come in down the road, and they come in off the highway. Well, we have a lot of engine braking going on. You don't have that problem. You also have some better, like I said, the 0-60 time, one of the benefits of that, you have better get up and go with these semis. And so if you're thinking about like a traffic situation where you're waiting for a bunch of semis to go and the light's trying to change, these semis take off a lot faster. You're going to have a more smoother traffic. It's not going to be so herky-jerky and like, say, with a traffic jam. You're not going to have that waiting for the semis to go. They're just smoother, they're quicker, and you're going to have to much a smoother traffic, especially over the mountains. So like if you go over Eisenhower Pass, 11,500 and some feet or whatever it is, semis have a slow lane. That's literally what they have. They have a slow lane for the semis. And so you have to move those semis off the slow lane a little bit. They'll be able to pull all the way to the top. They're not going to keep losing and have to shifting all the way down. Not going to create a bunch of noise. And they're going to be a smoother driving over those semis. So like during the wintertime, it's a huge issue in Colorado and similar different places throughout the country is during ski season. You have these semis go up over the passes, which is killing traffic jams because they have all these cars backed up. If you had a hydrogen fuel cell semis doing that instead of the diesel fuel semis, you're going to have a smoother, not going to have no more traffic jams because of the variety of cars, but you're going to have less traffic jams. You're going to have a smoother drive. You're going to have less of a buildup because you're not going to slow down as much as a diesel will. They don't need to build up the compression. They're getting a go. And so there's some unintended benefits there. I definitely foresee this working out well in Port of Los Angeles, Port of Long Beach. I mean, you know, you put those trucks out there and these guys are able to drive and they're not going to get beat up so bad. They're not going to hurt. They're not going to fly back in their seat and, you know, get worn down if they're driving all day because you literally just get in, press the pedal, and you're going. And I asked one of our drivers there if they had any over-the-road drivers come in and actually work with them. And they said, yeah, they hired a guy when they first started. And he said, you know, that guy was simply amazed at how he had to change his driving pattern for this semi. He was used to doing the gears, used to the way the engine would the truck would herk a little bit or jerk and the way they would take a while to get going. And it's just it blew his mind how much faster this truck is. And so there's a lot of benefits here that I don't think people are gonna pick up on right away. And the business case I think makes a lot of sense too. Toyota could, they have a couple different options here. They could literally build hydrogen fuel cell semis, and they could build those if they wanted to. They could license technology and sell it to Kenworth and places. They could have adaptability kits. Or they could just say, here's technology, and you can buy the fuel cells from us. So, I mean, their engines and fuel cells, they could do a lot of different varieties of different things. I think it's very exciting. I think that out of all the automakers, if it's going to be expensive to get going, and you need some R&D money. And Toyota's the big giant. I mean, they're a large automaker. They have the resources to make this work. And so if anybody's going to make this happen, I think Toyota's going to make it happen. They already have their Mirai in the marketplace. They already have that development. They're already selling it. And so I think once cities and communities and once fleet managers understand the benefits of having hydrogen, and once Shell and BP and different oil companies come in and they say, wow, we could sell hydrogen in our gas stations and make some money, I think you're going to find the infrastructure is going to come out, and it's going to be coming very, very quickly. It's going to come across the United States because there are a lot of benefits here that aren't found in other applications I've looked at, like different alternative fuels and different power sources, like an EV semi-truck just does not make sense to me. But being able to stop by, fuel up at your gas station, treat it as a normal gas or diesel truck. I mean, you treat it about the same, except you don't have all the maintenance. You don't have the wear and tear. You don't have the benefits. I could go on and on. I'm going to stop now, and I'll be back with my thoughts on the 2017 Ford Raptor. And finally, in today's episode, I want to talk to you about the 2017 Ford Raptor I've been driving around. It is a beautiful ruby red color. It has the new 3.5-liter high-output V6 EcoBoost engine. It's got a 10-speed transmission. It has all the Raptor gear, right? So it's got the 14 inches of additional wheel travel. It's got 3-inch Fox Racing shocks. It's got the Baja drive mode, which is fantastic off-road drive mode. It's got the steering wheel, different modes. You have comfort, you have normal, you have sport, and as far as how the steering wheel changes. It has dropped 500 pounds because it does have the aluminum throughout the bed and throughout the whole truck's aluminum, I should say. So it's got a lot of new features. The EcoBoost is a big conversation piece in this truck, and I'm going to go through that in a little bit. The EcoBoost power output is 450 horsepower and 510 foot-pounds of torque. And I want to say that first before I get into the controversy. So the controversy with this truck, and rabid Raptor fans know this controversy already, is that this truck is now with the turbocharged engine, the turbocharged V6 EcoBoost. And the prior generation was the 6.2-liter V8. And so the difference here is the exhaust note, right? So the V8, you had a larger displacement engine, and so you had a much deeper and more throatier exhaust sound. And the 3.5-liter V6, it's a smaller displacement turbocharged engine. You cannot get the same exhaust note out of it as you can the bigger V8. And I will tell you, after driving this at the Borrego Springs, which is their proving grounds, off-roading, and driving it around for the week, that's a bunch of bunk. And who cares? The truck is faster. The EcoBoost, the high-output EcoBoost, is just a faster and it's more fun to drive truck. So, you know, yeah, maybe it doesn't sound as throaty and deep as throaty as, say, the older Raptor, but, you know, the reality is it's a much faster driving truck, and it's much more fun to drive. So, yeah, there's some pro and con there as far as performance versus exhaust note, but I think you'd be foolish to go with the exhaust note over the performance. The thing it's got the 10-speed transmission. This is going to be new in all 2018 F-150s. I believe it's going to be all have 10 speeds. The Raptor came out with the first. What's interesting about this 10-speed is a couple things. First of all, it doesn't work in Baja mode. Baja mode actually restricts it to 6-speed, which is kind of a cool thing, right? So when you're doing a Baja and you're doing high-speed desert racing, it restricts the transmission's gearing to maximize the speed. And so it's a really cool thing that we're able to do these days with computers and vehicles. But what's great about the 10-speed is at interstate speeds. So I was driving along down to the airport, and it was doing 80 miles an hour, which is the speed limit in Wyoming, or Nebraska, I forget where I was at. Anyways, I was doing close to speed limit, 80 miles an hour, and it was only at 2,000 RPMs, which is pretty incredible for this size of a truck to be at 2,000 RPMs. I have the Super Cab, which is their extended cab version. It's got, you know, it's a big, wide truck. I think it was almost like 6 feet wide is 6 or 8 feet wide is how big the Raptor is. I mean, it's a big, sizable truck. And so driving along, 80 miles an hour, 2,000 RPMs in 10th gear. And, you know, as I've driven around town, I've driven around highways and such, it's amazing how seamless the 10-speed transmission is. You don't even feel it. But you still have to get up and go. So like 0 to 60 times in the Raptor, which is a funny thing to say about a truck, but that's what the truck is. It's an off-road machine. 0 to 60 times are just a little bit over 5 seconds. 5 seconds. 0 to 60. You cannot do that in the larger, the 6.2-liter V8. You just can't do that. So as I said, it's quicker, which is interesting to talk about as far as, you know, quickness isn't based on just your accelerator. Some trucks are quicker than the others based on curb weight and torque and horsepower and how the gearing's set up. And the Raptor is very, very quick. Now, that performance does come at the caveat of not having great fuel economy, right? So 15 city, 18 highway, and I'm not going to get anywhere near that because I'm going to stay in the boost. I'm going to drive it. I'm going to have a good time driving it. So, and frankly, I don't even care, right? I mean, it's a Ford Raptor. I don't really care about fuel economy, and I don't think the customer's caring about that either. You know, you got 14 inches of wheel travel. You have the KO2 tires on there. You have the Fox shocks. I mean, you want to drive it, and you want to drive it fast. And incredibly, and this is something that will surprise you, and I'm going to say this a couple times, it drives better off-road when it goes faster. So let me say that again. So if you're off-roading, the truck is smoother and better if you go faster. And I'll give you an example. I was driving out to Wyoming to the farm to work on my 62, and it's full of washboards, it's dirt roads, it's that kind of environment. In my father-in-law's 1990 Chevy truck, we have to drive moderately slow during the washboards. I mean, we're doing 15, maybe 20 miles an hour because it just beats you up so badly. He's got a GMC Sierra 2500. It's a 2007-8 model, and big diesel engine in that. And that truck, we have to drive slower with the washboards. With the Raptor, I was doing about 50 to 60 miles an hour, and as I went faster, it got smoother over the washboards. I couldn't feel the washboards affecting this truck at all. Okay, so it had like that Cadillac driving feel on the washboardy dirt roads. And yeah, I was going excessively fast. I was. But I wanted to see how it would react to the washboard situations. And I can tell you, it was so smooth. And I took my father-in-law out with the mother-in-law and a grandmother, and we did a drive. And they were all just really shocked at how much smoother that truck handled the washboards. And that's a real-world experience in that kind of truck. I've only experienced that kind of similar, not that degree, I've experienced that similar kind of drivability in the Honda Ridgeline because of the way it's set up with their drivetrain and their suspension and their frame. It's a little bit similar to that, but the Raptor is just so much faster and so much smoother than that. That's the only two trucks I've ever experienced that in. And so, you know, it's interesting because, granted, you know, it's a $60,000 truck. You know, that's what my MSRP is on the truck I'm driving. And very rarely you're going to find a farmer go out and buy a $60,000 Raptor. However, it'd be to their benefit. You know, their back's not going to hurt if driving it out to the farm. They're going to have a much more enjoyable drive. And with the off-roading ability and with the four-wheel drives and all the locking differentials and things, the Raptor is an amazing machine. It really, that's what it is. And so, you know, it was really interesting to actually use that in a real-world situation. Sure, it's a Baja truck in Southern California. That's the main purpose for it. But, you know, up in Montana, up in Nebraska, Wyoming, middle of Texas, I would imagine as well. I mean, this should be a hot truck to look at. I mean, you can drive this, like I said, at speed on dirt roads and get home and have it really be a benefit to your lifestyle rather than getting bounced around in your old pickup. So something to look into. I got to tell you, I'm a big fan of the truck. I did notice it. It's really interesting when you do a launch event and then you drive the vehicle, you get some different impressions. I had more road noise than I recall on highway speeds in California. And partly, you know, maybe whatever, you're on a trip, you're not paying that close attention to it. Driving it 150 miles on highway, you tend to pay more attention to that. So I had more road noise than I recall, but it wasn't bad. To me, it's acceptable for an off-road truck. I would say it's better than the Toyota Tundra TRD Pro, slightly better than that as far as road noise, but you know, it's quite a bit more money too. So something to check out. I think if you're talking about this truck and you're in the forums and you're online and you're talking with your buddies, don't buy into the 6.2 liter being that's the engine you have to have. Yeah, no, don't buy into that exhaust note either. Yes, Ford does pipe some exhaust sounds in the cab, but frankly, it doesn't bother me at all. It sounds fine. It's not the deep throaty sound to it, but really, when you're going 0 to 60 in just a little over 5 seconds, you're not going to care about the exhaust sound. Trust me on that one. And that'll do it for this week's edition of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Thanks for tuning in. Make sure you check us out on pickuptrucktalk.com. Email me at tim@pickuptrucktalk.com. Find us on Facebook at Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Hit the subscribe button for iTunes or Android Auto or no, Google Play, whatever they call it. Hit the subscribe button. Check us out. We have a YouTube channel as well. And we'll see you next week.